Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Shackman. It's campaign season again, and almost like clockwork, one of the most often repeated phrases when talking about budgets in the military is the term waste, fraud, and abuse. But how much of this really happens, and when it does, where is it, and how much does it cost the taxpayer? We know that one place where it is clearly going on is in Afghanistan. Since 2002, approximately $110 billion has been appropriated for Afghan relief and reconstruction. These funds are earmarked to build the Afghan National Security Forces, promote good governance, conduct development assistance, and engage in counter-narcotics and anti-corruption efforts. Because so much money is involved, Congress created the Office of Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction. Its goal was to provide independent and objective oversight to these reconstruction projects and activities. Since 2012, our guest today, John Sopko, has been Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. Mr. Sopko came to his office from Akin Gump. His government experience includes over 20 years on Capitol Hill, where he held key positions in both the Senate and House. He was Chief Counsel for Oversight and Investigations for the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. He served as General Counsel and Chief Oversight Counsel for the House Select Committee on Homeland Security. While at the Commerce Department, he was named Deputy Assistant Secretary for Enforcement for the Bureau's Export Administration and Deputy Assistant Secretary for National Telecommunications and Information Administration. He has served as a state and federal prosecutor, as a trial attorney with the U.S. Department of Justice Organized Crime and Racketeering Section, and it is my pleasure to welcome to the program the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, John Sopko. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Jeff.
First of all, talk a little bit about how the Inspector General's Office for Afghanistan Reconstruction was created and why initially.
Jeff, so the reason we were created was really twofold. One is that the amount of money we are spending on reconstruction is so big. It's the largest amount we have spent on any one country in the history of our republic. And because of that tremendous amount of money, Congress felt they needed a special unit set up because they thought the normal oversight function provided by the GAO and the other IGs would not be sufficient to look at this great extent of money. Just to put it in context, I think we may have talked about this in the past, that, you know, we spent more money on reconstruction in Afghanistan than we have on the entire Marshall Plan after World War II to reconstruct all of Europe. So it's about $110 billion. I think figuring it out for inflation, I think we spent about $103 billion in Europe. So it's just a tremendous amount of money, and that's why they created the office.
And yet, in creating the office and looking at this with respect to the amount of money, there is an implication, it seems, in there that waste, fraud, and abuse, or some variation of those things, is inherent in the process. If we looked at Fortune 500 companies that are spending, in some cases, equally huge sums, companies like Boeing or General Electric or what have you, we wouldn't necessarily make the assumption that it needed an inspector general to watch after every dollar.
Well, you know, Jeff, that is a really good point. And that's one of the points I try to make when I talk to the Hill and talk to the various agencies. The government works a lot different than a Fortune 500 company, as we all know. And that's the unfortunate thing in Afghanistan. The problems we're identifying are really the problems of how the government works. These are the same problems you see highlighted by my colleagues over in the VAIG, dealing with the Veterans Administration, by my colleagues over at the Department of Homeland Security, by my colleagues over at state aid and other agencies, and that you yourself and many fine reporters have highlighted. It's the problem of not having accountability. We don't hold people accountable for losing, wasting taxpayers' money. We have very poor personnel system. We can't hire the right people. We rotate them in and out in Afghanistan too quickly. We reward them for basically spending the money, not for actually accomplishing anything. Procurement, DOD procurement, has been broken since as long as I've been here in Washington and hasn't been fixed. If you look at the General Accounting Office, 1991, they put DOD procurement on their high risk list for fraud, waste, and abuse, and it's never come off. So what you see is a broken system. When you have that system operating in a war zone like Afghanistan, it's only magnified those problems. You know, it's like I joked, it's like, you know, somebody on steroids. I mean, these problems just get huge. The biggest reason is because people are shooting at us. You got a security overlay you got to take in consideration. So your analogy to Fortune 500 companies is absolutely correct. And I really feel that way because I used to represent Fortune 500 companies when I was in a law firm. And those companies approach problems, they approach the way they do business totally differently than the government does. Even without the broken tools, the bottom line is the key to Fortune 500 companies. I mean, I represented one client who could tell me how many pickles they used every day or in whatever franchise. These people knew the bottom line. They knew what it cost to produce something. I can't find anybody in USAID or other government agencies who can tell me anything about the bottom line and what the costs are and what are the benefits from doing something. The problem in the government is the bottom line is the appropriations. Did we meet the appropriations? Did we spend all the money? And that's the unfortunate approach to government as a whole.
Is the job of the Office of Special Inspector General in any agency, but specifically yours with respect to Afghan reconstruction, is the job to root out the corruption, to root out the fraud, waste, and abuse, or simply just to expose it?
Well, both. One way to root it out is by exposing it. I think it was Justice Brandeis who, at the turn of the century, commented that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and that publicity is one of the best tools and the most useful tool in reforming government or reforming social institutions. And so we publicize and publish almost all of our work, as long as it's not classified or otherwise prohibited by law or could harm anyone, in order to change how the government does business. So the answer is we do both. And by publicizing the problems, we try to change the way people do business.
And what is the accountability, though, within that framework? Has anyone gone to jail for, or been in any way sanctioned for some of these things?
Oh, my God, yes. You know, dozens of people have been indicted, and we've put in jail. I think we just had four soldiers just a couple weeks ago who got 10 and 15-year terms of in prison for theft. We have recovered close to $1 billion, our criminal investigators have, in fines and restitution. Our auditors have identified close to $1 billion in money that could be better spent. So we've done a lot of that. We've held people accountable where we can. Now, we're trying to change organizations that have been around for years and years and years and don't like somebody shining the spotlight at them. So sometimes we make recommendations, particularly to have people admonished for their failure to carry out their duties, and there's nothing we can do about that. And there was a recent case we had with a couple generals where we recommended that they be punished for wasting $30-40 million, and the Department of Defense ignored our recommendation. So we can only do so much. But you know, one thing to keep in mind, Jeff, is that, and this is probably one of the things that surprised me the most, most of the money, the problems we're seeing, isn't theft, isn't criminality. It's just waste and abuse. And apparently, the way this government runs, and this isn't a political statement, it doesn't matter which political party, just how the government has worked. And I've been looking at government and government oversight since I came to town in 1982. So Republican and Democratic governments, Republican Democratic Congresses. The problem is we don't hold people personally accountable. And as long as we don't hold people personally accountable, you're never going to fix this. So people got to be fired. People got to lose promotions. People got to get demoted. And only when that happens will we start to see really significant changes with protecting the taxpayers' dollar.
Looking at the money spent in Afghanistan, talk a little bit about some of the worst examples from a dollar perspective of the kind of waste that you've uncovered.
Well, from a dollar perspective, I think the biggest waste has been all of the work we have spent on counter-narcotics. We've spent approximately $8 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars on counter-narcotics. And overall, it hasn't really accomplished much of anything. And again, no one's been held accountable. Nobody's lost a job. No one's really been held to account. The only time you really see major reductions in production or export of drugs is because of either the weather is bad or a virus. It has nothing to do with any of the programs we created. But we will dutifully spend more money on the programs. Hopefully, I'm hoping with the new ambassador in Afghanistan, U.S. ambassador who has a great deal of experience dealing with narcotics. He actually was our ambassador in Colombia. I'm hoping with him and the new unity government, we may see some improvements. But that's probably been the biggest dollar amount wasted, about $8 billion. Another one, where do I start? Where do I end? TFBSO, that's the Task Force for Business Stabilization and Operations. It was a great idea, started in Iraq. Was the military's approach to trying to help the economy. It was brought over to Afghanistan, and it basically was a rogue operation. They spent about $1 billion, and we haven't been able to identify really much success, if any, from that $1 billion. And we'll be issuing another report on them next week, which will again be another horror story of waste and fraud and abuse. The G222 airplanes, there's another classic example. We bought approximately 20 airplanes for the Afghan Air Force. These were cargo planes to the tune of about $500 million. They were the wrong planes for Afghanistan, for the terrain and the weather and altitude. And we basically were told by pilots who flew the planes over that they were death traps. They were poorly maintained, poorly rehabbed, and they didn't fly. So you had 20 planes. You got two of them, I think, in Germany, which we have been inspecting, but they were horrors. They were just horrible pieces of aircraft. And we eventually had to turn them into scrap. We paid about $50,000 to have them turned into I think about $30,000 worth of scrap metal. So we got 3 cents on the dollar. Even cost us money to scrap them. That's another horror case. I mean, I can keep going on and on and on. I mean, one of the funniest ones is the Department of Agriculture spent about $30 million on trying to develop a soybean industry in Afghanistan, and unfortunately it was, I actually had one of the briefers from the Department of Agriculture, when he briefed me in Afghanistan, halfway through said, you know, he used the profanity and saying, well, look, let me just tell you the truth, it's been a total disaster. The Afghans don't grow soy, they don't eat soy, they don't want soy, but we gave them soy. And so that's $30 million out the door. I could just go on chapter and verse, Jeff. I mean, I recommend any of your listeners go on our website. It'll be one horror story after another. Some of these things, Jeff, seriously, you can't make up. I mean, it would almost be primetime comedy, except for the fact it's the taxpayer's dollar and the fact that the there's people's lives at stake, and people really worked hard, and we have very little to show for it.
I want to talk about that, how you see this with respect to the nexus with security conditions in Afghanistan, and how much of this waste, if the money had been properly spent and or not wasted, would have resulted in better security conditions in Afghanistan?
Well, that's a difficult question, an important one, but difficult. You know, we spent, of that $110 billion, about $60 billion were spent on trying to build up the police and the Army and the Air Force, and actually the Navy. The little that people knew that there actually is an Afghan Navy. We found it. It was boxed up in Norfolk. It never got, for a landlocked country, we found that a little humorous that we tried to build them a Navy. But putting that aside, we have spent a lot of money, billions of dollars on it. And you know, the Afghan military and the police and their Air Force are a lot better than they were when we started. And I got to give credit to the people in the military, General Campbell, who's running it now with his people in his command, have done the best they can. But it's tough. You're talking about fighting a very insidious, dangerous insurgency, and that's always going to be tough. But they have done the best they can. If the security was a lot better, then I would feel more comfortable about the potential success and, more importantly, the sustainability of all of the other programs, the schools, the clinics, the roads, the airports, all of that other stuff. That is my big concern, and I think it's really, really appropriate that you're asking or doing this interview right now after Kunduz and after what has been revealed about what happened in Kunduz after the Taliban took over, because that is the big threat. The big threat is if the Afghan government and the military loses control, the Taliban are going to come in like a whirlwind and punish the poor Afghan civil servants, the teachers, the women, the girls who have been trying to change the reality in Afghanistan. And we saw examples of that. I think some of the other media people have been able to get in there and showed how the Taliban hunted down women who were trying to run schools, run businesses, run clinics, run halfway homes for little girls and boys. That is what's concerning me the most, is if we can't sustain the gains we have made, it's the dirtiest trick we have played on the Afghans.
From your perspective and from what you've seen, how is the Afghan government, with a GDP of only $21 billion of its own, how are they viewing this kind of waste and profligate spending that they see on the part of the U.S.?
Well, you know, the new unity government under President Ghani and CEO Abdullah really are taking fraud, waste, and abuse seriously. I'm very optimistic. I would not have said I was optimistic a year ago with the prior regime. But this current regime really understands the problem and is trying to address it. So, yeah, they see the problem. They see it more than we do. I mean, that's one of the ironies. I've argued with some USAID officials here in Washington who are saying, oh, no, you don't want to reveal the problems because the Afghans will get upset. I'm trying to, God, the Afghans know when the road isn't built. They know when the bridge falls down. They know when the school isn't constructed the right way. The Afghans know what the problems are. It's the U.S. taxpayer and the Congress who don't know. So this happy talk that comes out of the aid headquarters, USAID's headquarters, is just happy talk. It's not the reality. The Afghans are the ones who are on the ground. They're the ones who see the fraud, waste, and abuse and are upset even more than we are. And I am happy to say we are working very closely with President Ghani and CEO Abdullah on new procurement reforms. We actually are the only U.S. law enforcement agency who's been invited to attend the weekly procurement council meetings run by the president and CEO Abdullah, who are trying to review and ferret out fraud, waste, and abuse on procurement contracts. That's fantastic. The prior government wasn't interested in that at all. This new government is interested in procurement reform, and I applaud them and all the staff they have who are working with us on these issues.
And yet, on the other hand, your own government, the U.S. government, seems to be doing everything possible to cut your budget and cut your personnel.
Well, no, that's not absolutely true. I mean, Congress has given us all the money we've wanted. OMB has approved our budget requests, so they've done that. There was a mistake made by some people who I don't think understood the role of an independent inspector general in state. And once they realized that we weren't part of the State Department, they corrected that problem. So no, they haven't tried to cut us. I actually had a very nice meeting with senior officials, political officials at the State Department about that little confusion, and they clearly said that was a mistake. Don't worry about it.
Talk a little bit about your relationship and what you do with both the DOD and contractors for the DOD, because in many ways it seems like a very adversarial situation.
Yeah, it actually isn't. It's a normal a relationship. I'm an independent inspector general. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm like the referee at a football game, which are very popular now, or the umpire at the baseball games, and we're all rooting for. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm rooting for some teams. But anyway, I won't go there. But you know, the umpire calls the balls and strikes. He calls the person out. He calls out whether it's a foul ball or not. That doesn't mean the umpire doesn't believe in the game of baseball. I believe in the mission. My staff, I got 200 dedicated staff who believe in the mission, but our job is to call the balls and strikes. And when somebody's out of line, and we throw people out. You know, we throw somebody out of the game, that's usually with an indictment. But so most people, most of the adults, let's just say that, and that mean particularly the political appointees, when you talk about people who are appointed to high senior office, they understand the role of independent inspectors general. They understand the role of oversight. What the problem is some of these mid-level bureaucrats who really don't understand what the role is. And those are the ones we have problems with. Now, talking about contractors, I'll be very honest with you. We get more allegations and better information from contractors than we do from some civil servants. Because the contractors come in and say, you can't believe what they're asking us to do. I mean, this is crazy, but we got to abide by the contracts. So the contractors are actually our allies. And we have gone out of our way to defend contractors from corrupt police and politicians in Afghanistan. I'm talking about Afghan police and politicians, not U.S. And we are the only ones who took up their call. They were ignored by the other agencies. And we basically rebuked, if you take a look at one of our earlier reports, the State Department and USAID for not being more aggressive to defend our contractors from illegal taxation. And we are still looking at that issue right now. So actually, it's not too antagonistic, particularly the adults. You know, we're always going to get some wisecracks from people who don't understand or have a personal incentive to see a bad contract carried out. But most of the contractors have been extremely responsible in responding to our request for information and then voluntarily coming forward with information.
Have whistleblowers played much of a role in uncovering some of what you've seen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. God bless whistleblowers. And, you know, I have dealt with whistleblowers my entire life. As a prosecutor, as a Hill investigator, as a private attorney, and now as a inspector general. And if we didn't have whistleblowers, the government would be 100 times worse than what it is right now. So God bless them.
Talk about where a lot of this misappropriated money is going. If a lot of it is more waste than corruption, as you've talked about, talk a little bit about where this money has wound up.
It goes everywhere. I mean, a lot of it's here in Northern Virginia. A lot has been invested right here in the United States. Look, no self-respecting crook or swindler in Afghanistan wants to keep the money in Afghanistan. They want to move it. And that's actually where we can catch them, because if we can identify it and they move it in the international banking arena, we do have some authorities and powers to pursue that. But the money goes everywhere, and I can't really describe in detail because a lot of this stuff is classified or covered by ongoing and criminal investigations, but you just cannot believe where all the money has ended up. It's all over the world, but a lot of it here in the United States.
Finally, do you think that there's any reason to hope that some of these problems that are inherent in the system, as you said at the outset, can be addressed as a result of what you're uncovering and the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a firm believer that the problems were created by man can correct them. And that's what's been guiding my life since I started as a county prosecutor back in 1977. People make a difference, and they can make a difference. And so, we can fix it. And here's the other thing, and just human nature. You know, Jeff, I don't know where you live, but I live over in Bethesda. And there's a sign when I come down Mass Avenue and says there's radar, you know, radar ahead. And God bless the Montgomery County Police because I slow down. And I had a general sitting in my office a year ago or 2 years ago. He said, John, you remind me of a highway patrolman. I hate you, but when I know you're out there with the radar gun, I slow down. And that may be our best legacy. We have gotten people to look over their shoulders, look in the rearview mirror, and slow down. We have actually heard anecdotally of meetings in government agencies where they have said, well, if we do this, what is SOPCO going to do? And I'm telling you, that's all we need to start saving the taxpayer money. And look, we're trying to change the way the government does business. And we're doing it in little Afghanistan. My other colleagues in the IG community are and should be doing more of the same, so we can try changing the entire way the government does business. I highly recommend to any of your listeners, read the 1978 IG Act, read the amendments to the Act. That act was one of the best methods in place to change the way the government works. And if it was enforced to the fullest, and if the agencies all lived up to it, and all the IGs were aggressive as we are, I think we could really change how the government works to the better.
John Sopko, the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.